Perhaps so, by Jove. But did we admit that correctly?
And yet it lately seemed to be fairly said.
But I suspect it ought not only to have seemed lately to be said fairly, but to seem so at present, and hereafter too, if there be anything sound in it.
What is the matter now? Looking to what, are you dissatisfied with it? And why doubt that virtue is a science?
I will tell you, Meno, that virtue is to be taught, if it be a science, is a position I do not retract, so to say, that it has not been correctly asserted. But consider whether I appear to reasonably doubt that virtue is a science. For tell me this, if anything is to be taught, not virtue only, must there not be of necessity both teachers and scholars?
I think there must.
Hence, on the contrary, that, of which there are neither teachers nor scholars, should we conjecture rightly, in conjecturing it is not to be taught.
Such is the fact. But do you not think that there are teachers of virtue?
After a lengthened inquiry, whether there were any teachers of virtue, I cannot, with all my efforts, discover any. And yet do I make the search with many, and those too, whom I think would be the most skilled in the matter. And just now, Meno, in happy time, has any Tus sat down here by us, to whom we can give a share in the search? And with reason should we give him a share. For, in the first place, he is the son of the wealthy and the wise Anthemian, a man who has become rich, not by accident, nor yet by a gift from anyone, as Ismenias of Thebes has done, who has lately obtained the property of Polycrates, but having acquired his wealth by his own wisdom and carefulness. And secondly, as regards his other qualities, he is a citizen deemed to be neither haughty nor puffed up, nor overbearing, but to conduct himself like a decent and well-behaved man. And then, he has brought up and educated his son here very well, in the opinion of the Athenian multitude, for they elect him to the highest offices in the state. With such men it is right, then, to make a search after teachers of virtue, whether there are any or not, and who they are. Do you then, Enitus, unite with me, and Meno here, your guest, in our search after this very thing, as to who are the teachers of it. Now consider the matter in this way. If we wished this Meno to become a good physician, to what teachers should we send him? Should we not send him to the physicians?
By all means.
And if we wished to make him a good courier, should we not send him to the couriers?
To be sure.
And so as regards the rest of subjects?
Without doubt.
But concerning the same things, tell me again this. In sending him to the physicians, we say we should do well, if we wished to make him a good physician. Now when we say this, do we not mean that we should act with prudence in sending him to those who make that art their profession, rather than to those who do not, and who, making for themselves a remuneration for this very thing, put themselves forth as the teachers of anyone willing to go and learn? Is it not from looking to these matters that we should do well in sending him?
Yes.
Hence in the case of music and the other arts, the same things take place. And it is a great folly for us, if we wish to make any one a flute player, to be willing to send him, not to such as profess to teach the art, and to make money by it, but to give trouble to some other persons, and to look for his learning from those who do not profess to be teachers, and have not one pupil in that branch of instruction, which we think proper that the person whom we send should learn. Does not this seem to you to be very unreasonable?
Yes, by Jupiter, and ignorance to boot.
You say well. Now then you may consult in common with me about this guest of yours, Meno here. For he told me some while ago, Enitus, that he had a longing for that wisdom and virtue, through which men govern well both their household and the state, and pay attention to their parents, and know how to receive both their countrymen and foreigners, and to send them away in a manner worthy of a good man. Consider then, to what persons, about to teach this virtue, should we in sending him correctly send? Is it not clear that, according to the reasons detailed just now, we should send him to those who profess to be teachers of virtue, and publicly proffer themselves common to any one of the Greeks desirous to learn, after fixing the price, and making it a matter of business?
Of what persons, Socrates, are you speaking?
You surely know that these are they whom men call sophists.
O Hercules! Speak fair words, Socrates. On none of my relations, or family, or friends, or fellow citizens, or foreign guests, may ever such a madness seize as to go and be spoiled by them. For those fellows are clearly the bane and corruption of their associates.
How say you, Enitus? Are they the only men among those who, so widely different from all the rest, profess the knowledge of doing something beneficial, and yet do not only not improve, as others do, what one puts into their hands, but on the contrary, spoil it, and do they think fit openly to make money for themselves for this? For my part, I know not how to believe you. For I know that one man, Protagoras, by name, has acquired singly more wealth from this wisdom than both Tisiphidius, who has produced works so conspicuously beautiful, and 10 other statuaries besides. Indeed, it is a prodigy you are telling me, if when the menders of old shoes, and the patchers of old clothes, could not escape for 30 days from being publicly known, if they returned the clothes or shoes in a worse condition than they received them, and if they did so, they would soon perish by hunger, yet, that Protagoras should undiscovered corrupt the whole of Greece, by sending away his associates even worse men than he received them, and this for above 40 years. For I think he was near 70 years of age when he died, after having passed 40 in his profession. And during all that time he never ceased, being in high repute, even to this day, and not only Protagoras, met with this success, but very many others, some born prior to him, and some still living. Shall we then say, according to your account, that they knowingly deceived and corrupted the youth, or that they did, so unconscious of it to themselves? Shall we deem those to be so much out of their senses, who, some say, were the wisest of mankind?
They are far from being out of their senses, Socrates. Much rather so are those youths who give them money, and still more so than the youths are their relations, in committing them to such men, but most so of all are the states that suffer them to come thither, and do not drive out a person, whether foreigner or citizen, who endeavors to do any such thing.
Has any of the sophists done you, any to us, any injury, or why are you so hard upon them?
I have never, by Jupiter, associated with one of them myself, nor would I suffer any person who belonged to me to do so.
You have no experience at all then of those men?
And never may I have.
How then should you know, a happy man, respecting this matter, whether it has any good or harm, when you have no experience of it at all?
Easily enough. For I know what sort of fellows they are, whether I have any experience or not of them.
Perhaps you are a prophet, any to us. Since how otherwise you could know respecting them, I should, from what you say yourself, much wonder. But we were not inquiring what the persons are, to whom we know might go, and become a bad man. For let these, if you will, be the sophists. But now speak to us of those others, and do an act of kindness to this hereditary friend of yours, by telling him to what persons in this great city he may go and become worthy of note for that virtue which I was just now detailing.
But why did you not tell him yourself?
What persons I conceived to be the teachers of these things I have told already. But I happen to have said nothing, to the purpose, as you inform me. And perhaps there is something in what you say. Now, therefore, you in your turn, tell him to whom of the Athenians he should go. Mention the name of whomsoever you like.
What need is there of hearing the name of any one man? For whomsoever of the men of honor and virtue among the Athenians he may meet, there is not one of them who would not make him a better man than the sophists would, if he will be but persuaded.
But did these men of honor and virtue become such spontaneously, and without having learnt from any man, to be so? And are they able to teach others what they were never taught themselves?
They, I presume, learnt from their predecessors, being men of honor and virtue. Or think you that many excellent men have not been produced in this city?
I think, any to us, that there are in the city men excellent in political affairs, and that there have been still not less so than there are. But were they good teachers of their own virtue? For it is this, about which our present discourse happens to be, not whether good men are at present here or not, nor whether such have been produced formerly, but whether virtue is to be taught or not, we have been for a long time considering. And in considering that question, we are come to consider this, whether those excellent men, either of the present or former, they knew how to hand over to another that virtue, by which they themselves were good, or whether this cannot be handed over to, or received by, one man from another. This it is, which we have been long examining, and me know. Consider then the question in this manner, according to your own argument. Would you not say that Themistocles was a good man?
Yes, the best of all.
And would you not then say that, if ever any other man was the teacher of his own virtue, he was one?
I suppose, So, if he wished it.
But would he not have wished, think you, for some others to become men of honor and virtue, and especially his own son? Or do you think that he envied his son, and did designedly not hand over to him that virtue, in which he himself was excellent? Have you not heard that Themistocles caused his son Cleophantus to be taught to be a good horseman? For example, he remained standing upright upon horses, and upright, too, upon horses he threw a javelin, and performed many other surprising feats, in which his father had caused him to be instructed. And that he made him skilled in such accomplishments as are connected with the having good teachers? Have you not heard this from the elderly people?
I have heard it.
No one then would have accused his son of being of an evil nature?
Perhaps not.
But what is this? That Cleophantus, the son of Themistocles, became a good and a wise man, as did his father. Have you ever heard this from any person, either young or old?
No, indeed.
Do we imagine, then, that he wished to bring up his own son in such studies, and yet, in the wisdom where he himself was wise, not to make his son at all better than his neighbors, if virtue could be taught?
By Jove, perhaps not.
Such a teacher of virtue then is this one of yours, whom you yourself acknowledge to have been amongst the best men of former times. And now let us consider another, Aristides, the son of Lysimachus. Do you not confess that he was a good man?
I do entirely.
And did not he too give his son Lysimachus the best education at Athens, so far as depended on teachers, and you think he made him a better man than anyone whatsoever? For you have associated with him, and you see what sort of a man he is. But if you wish another, you know that Pericles, a man of such lofty bearing and wisdom, bred up his two sons, Paralus and Xanthippus.
I do.
These, as you know yourself, he ought to be horsemen not inferior to any of the Athenians, and he instructed them in music and gymnastics, and the rest of accomplishments that depend on art, so as to be inferior to none. But had he no wish to make them good men? I believe he had the wish, but I suspect it to be impossible to teach virtue. And that you may not think that a few persons, and the most humble in means of the Athenians, were incompetent for such an affair, consider that Thucydides likewise brought up his two sons, Meleagius and Stephanos, and educated them well in other respects, and particularly in wrestling the best of the Athenians. For he entrusted one to Xanthias, and the other to Eudorus, and these, too, were thought to be the best wrestlers of that time. Do you not remember this?
I do by hearsay.
Is it not plain, then, that he would never have taught his children those things, in the teaching of which he must have been put to expense, and not have taught them to be good men, which would have required him to spend nothing, if such a thing could be taught? But Thucydides perhaps was of very humble means, and had not very many friends among the Athenians and their allies. It was not so. For he was of a noble family, and had great influence in the city, and in the other Grecian states, so that if this could be taught, he might have found out a person, either one of his own countrymen or a foreigner, who might have made his sons virtuous, if, through his superintendence of the state, he had no leisure himself. But I fear, friend Anytus, that virtue is a thing not to be taught.
You seem to me, Socrates, to speak ill of persons with great facility. But I would advise you, if you are willing to hearken to me, to be on your guard. For in another city too it is perhaps more easy to do a man mischief than good, but in this it is especially so, and I think you are sensible of it yourself.
Anytus seems to me to be angry, Meno, and I am not at all surprised at it. For, in the first place, he thinks I am speaking ill of those very persons, and then he considers himself to be one of them. But if he should ever know what it is to speak ill of others, he will cease to be angry, but at present he is ignorant of it. Do you then tell me, are there not amongst us men of honor and virtue?
Certainly.
And are these men willing to offer themselves to youths as teachers, and to confess both, that they are teachers and that virtue is to be taught?
By Jupiter, Socrates, they do not. But you may hear them saying, at one time, that it is to be taught, at another, not.
Shall we say, then, that these men are teachers of that thing, about which they are not agreed?
I think not, Socrates.
Well, but do those sophists, who alone proclaim themselves teachers, appear to you to be so?
It is for this, Socrates, that I especially admire Gorgias, because you would never hear him making such professions. On the contrary, he laughs at the others whenever he hears them making such a promise, and conceives that he ought to make men powerful in speaking.
Do not then the sophists seem to you to be teachers of virtue?
I know not, Socrates, what to say. For I have suffered myself what the many do. Sometimes I think they are, and sometimes not.
But you know, that not only to yourself and the others versed in civil affairs, it seems at one time, that this is to be taught, and at another, not. And you know that the poet Theognis says the very same thing.
In what verses?
In his elegies, where he says, with some drink thou and eat, and with some sit, and pleasant bait are those, whose powers far known, good from the good thou'lt learn, but with the bad mixing, thou'lt lose the good thoughts once thine own. Do you perceive that in these verses, he speaks of virtue as a thing to be taught?
So it appears.
And yet in other verses he says, passing on a little further, that if wisdom could be made and placed in man, they, who could accomplish this, many and great rewards would carry off, and from a good sire no bad son e'er would come, to words of wisdom listening. But thou'lt ne'er by teaching make the bad a virtuous man. You observe, that in speaking upon the same subjects, he contradicts himself.
So it appears.
Can you tell me then of any other thing whatever, of which they, who profess to be teachers, are not only not held by others to be teachers, but who, confess, to be ignorant of it themselves, and who act like knaves in that very thing, which they profess to teach, and where they, who are allowed to be men of honor and virtue themselves, at one time say it is to be taught, and at another, it is not? Those then, who are so tossed about in mind about any subject whatever, would you say, are the master teachers of it?
By Jupiter, not I.
If then neither the sophists, nor they who are men of honor and virtue themselves, are teachers of this thing, it is plain there can be no others beside.
I think there can be none.
But if no teachers, then no scholars.
I think the matter is, as you say.
But we have agreed that the thing, of which there are neither teachers nor scholars, is not to be taught.
We have agreed.
A virtue then there appear nowhere any teachers.
It is so.
And if no teachers, then no scholars.
It appears so.
Virtue therefore cannot be taught.
It seems so, if we have considered the matter rightly, so that, Socrates, I am led to wonder whether there are any men really good, and if there are, what can be the manner of producing good men?
We are in danger, O Meno, of being, both you and I, men of no mark, and that Gorgias has not taught you sufficiently, nor Prodicus me. Above all things, therefore, we ought to apply our minds to ourselves, and to seek a person, who by one way at least, would make us better men. I say this with the night of the inquiry lately made, since it has escaped us ridiculously, that it is not only under the guidance of science, that affairs are administered by men rightly and well, or, perhaps the knowledge of the means, by which men become good, has escaped us.
How, Socrates, say you this?
In this way. Because, since we have rightly agreed that good men must be useful to us, this cannot be otherwise. Is it not so?
Certainly.
And that they will be useful, should they conduct affairs rightly. Did we not well admit this?
Yes.
But are we like persons that have not rightly agreed in saying that unless one is prudent, it is not possible to conduct affairs rightly?
How say you rightly?
I will tell you. If a man who knew the way to Larissa, or wherever else you please, were to walk and act as a guide to others, would he not conduct them well and rightly?
Without doubt.
What if one had only a correct opinion about the way, but had never gone it himself, nor had any certain knowledge of it, would not he also conduct others rightly?
To be sure.
And so long as he had anyhow a correct opinion of things, of which the other man had a certain knowledge, he would not be at all a worse guide, though, only, surmising justly, and not knowing clearly, than the other with his perfect knowledge.
Not at all worse.
Correct opinion, therefore, with regard to correct action, is not at all a worse guide than perfect knowledge. And this it is, which we omitted just now, in considering of what kind is the nature of virtue, when we said that prudence only led to right action. Now this is correct opinion.
It seems so.
Correct opinion therefore is not at all less beneficial to man than certain knowledge.
In this respect, however, Socrates, it is because he who has a perfect knowledge would always attain his object, but he who had only a correct opinion would sometimes attain it, and sometimes not.
How say you, would not the man who has always a correct opinion always attain his object, so long as he had a correct opinion?
It appears to me that he must, so that, this being the case, I wonder, Socrates, on what account it is that science is so much more valuable than correct opinion, And in what respect it is that one is this thing, and the other another?
You know why you wonder, or shall I tell you?
By all means tell me.
It is because you never directed your mind to the images made by Daedalus. But perhaps you have none of them amongst you.
With what view do you say this?
Because, if they are not fastened, they run away and become fugitives. But if they are fastened, they stay.
And what then?
To possess one of his works unfastened is, like the possessing a runaway slave, a matter of little value, because it does not remain. But fastened, it is of great value, for indeed they are works of great beauty. But why do I thus speak of them? It is with reference to true opinions, for true opinions likewise, so long as they abide by us, are a valuable possession, and procure for us all good things. But they are not willing to abide a long time, for they run away from the soul of a man, so that they are of little value, until one has fastened them down by the reasoning respecting their cause. And this, friend Meno, is reminiscent, as we before agreed. But when they are fastened down, in the first place they become perfect knowledge, and subsequently abiding. Now it is on this very account that perfect knowledge is a thing more valuable than correct opinion, and it is by this binding that perfect knowledge differs from correct opinion.
By Jupiter, Socrates, it seems like to some such thing. 91.
And yet I speak this, not as one knowing, but only from conjecture. But that correct opinion and science are two different things, this I seem to myself not to conjecture. But if I should say I knew anything else, and there are but few things I would say I know, I would set down this as one of those I do know.
And you say rightly, Socrates.
What then, say I, not rightly this too, that correct opinion, having the conduct of any work of action whatever, executes her office, not at all worse than perfect knowledge.
And this too I think you say rightly.
Correct opinion therefore is a thing, not at all inferior to perfect knowledge, nor less beneficial with regard to action. Nor is the man, who has a correct opinion, inferior to the man of perfect knowledge.
It is so.
And it has been agreed that a good man is useful.
Yes.
Since then it is not through perfect knowledge alone that men can be good and useful to their country, if there are any such men, but by correct opinion likewise, and since neither of these exists to men by nature, or do you think that either of them comes by nature?
Not I.
Since then they are not by nature, neither is it by nature, that men could have been virtuous.
Certainly not.
Since then, virtue comes, not by nature, we inquire, in the next place, whether it is to be taught.
Just so.
Did it not appear to us both, that it was to be taught, if virtue were wisdom?
It did.
And that if it were to be taught, then, virtue, would be wisdom.
Very true.
And that, if there were any teachers, it could be a thing to be taught. Otherwise, not.
Just so.
But we have agreed that there are no teachers of it.
It is so.
We are agreed, therefore, that it is not to be taught, nor is it wisdom.
Certainly.
But we agreed, besides, that it was something good.
Yes.
And that whatever conducted affairs rightly was a thing beneficial.
We did clearly.
And that affairs are conducted rightly by these two things only, correct opinion and perfect knowledge, by possessing which a man is a good guide. For what comes from fortune is not the effect of human guidance. But where a man is the guide to right, there are these two, correct opinion and perfect knowledge.
I think so.
Now since virtue is not to be taught, it is not the effect of perfect knowledge.
It appears it is not.
Of the two things then, good and serviceable, one has been set loose, nor can perfect knowledge be a guide in the administration of civil affairs.
I think it cannot.
Not therefore as being wise in any wisdom, did such men take the lead in the state, as Themistocles, and the rest, of whom Anytus here has just now spoken. And for this very reason they were not able to make others such as themselves, because it was not through perfect knowledge they were such.
The case, O Socrates, seems to be as you represent it.
If then it is not by perfect knowledge, it follows it is by correct opinion, of which politicians making an use, regulate states, being men not at all superior in wisdom, to oracle singers and divine prophets. For these also utter many true sayings, but know nothing of what they utter.
This seemed to be very near the fact.
Is it not meet then, O Meno, to call these men divine, who, without possessing a mind concerning what they do and say, direct many and great things aright?
by all means.
Rightly then should we call those men divine, whom we just now mentioned, the oracle singers and the prophets, and all poetical persons? And not the least divine of such persons, should we say that statesmen are, and no less enthusiasts, being inspired divinely, and possessed by the divinity, when in their speeches they direct aright many and great affairs, without knowing anything of what they are saying?
Certainly we should.
And even women, Meno, call good men divine. And the Lacedaemonians, when they celebrate with encomiums any brave man, say, this is a divine man.
And they appear, O Socrates, to speak justly too. And yet, perhaps, Anytus here is offended at what you say.
I care not. With him, Meno, we shall have some discourse at another time. But if we, during all this conversation, have inquired and spoken correctly, virtue can neither come by nature, nor yet be taught, but by a divine fate is present to those, with whom it is present, without intelligence. Unless amongst statesmen there be such a person as is able to make another man a statesman, and if there be, he might almost be said to be such among the living, as Homer tells us Tiresias is among the dead. Well, speaking of him, he says, that he alone, of those in Hades, was intelligent, but the rest, like shadows, flitted. The same thing would forthwith such a man be, with respect to virtue, as a true thing is compared with shadows.
You seem to me, Socrates, to speak most beautifully.
From this reasoning then, Meno, it appears to us that to whom virtue is present, it is present by a divine fate. But on this point we shall then know the truth, when, previous to our inquiries by what means is virtue present to men, we set about searching first what virtue is by itself. But it is now time for me to go somewhere else. And you, since you are persuaded yourself on these points, persuade also your guest Anytus here, in order that he may thus become more mild, so that, should you persuade him, it is possible for you to do some service to the Athenians likewise.